Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Now, here's Frank Morano.
There is one issue that affects everybody, whether you are young, old, male, female, non-binary, Republican, Democrat, non-political, black, white, Haitian, whatever the case may be. There is one issue that not only affects every person listening to us right now, but it affects issues related to the environment, affects issues related to national security, the economy, and just about everything else. It's also an issue that everybody seems to have an opinion about. The issue is energy. I was at a bachelor party over the weekend, and a friend of mine who's an electrician said he's very anti-electric cars, even though he's an electrician. And he says anybody that gets an electric car is stealing from the electric grid. And he proceeds to go on literally a 12-minute diatribe about how electricity is not meant to power things that are 2,000 pounds. And I'm not saying whether he's right or wrong, but the point is, everybody is passionate about it. And it seems like where we are in society today is some people want energy that's clean. That's why things like wind and solar have gotten so much attention. Other people want energy that is cheap. Other folks want energy that is reliable and that will make sure that your car doesn't shut down when you're halfway through a road trip, or that your lights don't go out when there's a precarious weather situation. Is it possible that there is an energy out there that is clean, efficient, reliable, and inexpensive? For years, people have been touting the possibility of nuclear energy. Now, when we think of nuclear energy, we think of power plants that can power wide swaths of land. But imagine if your car was powered by nuclear energy. Does that sound like science fiction? Well, it just so happens there is a company that is planning to lead a rollout of small nuclear reactors. And one of the people behind that is someone we know quite well, and in the interest of full disclosure, is not only the owner of this radio network, but a close friend and the man single-handedly responsible for me being able to pay my mortgage. I want to first welcome John Catsimatidis, who is the owner of the Red Apple Group, the host of the nationally syndicated show The Cats Roundtable, and the author of the best-selling book How Far Do You Want to Go? Lessons from a Common Sense Billionaire. John, thanks for staying up late or getting up early, whichever it is.
Well, good morning, Frank. I'll tell you, the truth is I took a little bit of a nap, and I set the alarm clock, and I woke up about 15, 20 minutes ago, so I feel fresh. Now, your friend was a little bit wrong about the 2,000 pounds. The average electric car probably weighs 6,000 pounds, and that was the because of the weight of the battery. And that was the reason that that garage collapsed when there were too many electric cars on the roof, and it had a weak structure. And it's going to be a further problem if you have too many electric cars in our bridges.
Well, I have
somebody out there better think about that.
I have a lot of questions about what you're doing and about electric cars and a whole bunch of things. But let me bring on two other members of our panel who are going to help us explain this to folks and work our way through this. I want to welcome Bob Percopo, who has had a distinguished career in business, including playing pivotal roles at companies like AIG. Now he is the COO of the United Nuclear Group. Bob, welcome. welcome to the program. Thanks for staying up late with us.
Thank you, Frank.
And let's also welcome someone that's no strain, someone that folks who listen to these radio stations are very familiar with, Jay Nelson Happy, the attorney for the Red Apple Group and one of the brightest legal minds anywhere. Nelson, it's great to talk to you again.
Hey, thank you, Frank.
Okay, so let's begin, John, with your interest in this. I think most of the audience probably knows that you have a history in real estate. You have a history in the oil business. You have a long history in energy. Why, after such a lengthy career in the oil business, would you decide to explore nuclear energy? What brought you to this point?
Frank, this is the energy of the future. There is nothing else that could replace fossil fuels or oil over the next 50 years. Oil is going to be around forever. Well, forever as far as what we're living with. Next 100 years. But nuclear energy is the only thing that's powerful enough to be able to run this country. Anybody that thinks windmills and solar cells are going to run this country, they're a little bit light-minded, a little lightness in the head. And everybody that really believes this, my joke was I'll sell them the Brooklyn Bridge. I'll give a good price in the Brooklyn Bridge. We'll make a deal with Eric Adams and Curtis Sliwa.
Yeah, I think with congestion pricing, you might get some takers for that. Bob, before we get to what you guys are doing, I'm wondering if, and Nelson as well, I'm wondering if you guys can educate our audience a little bit about nuclear energy in general. One of the things that people that push nuclear energy always say is that there are no greenhouse gas emissions and that it's actually a much cleaner way to provide energy than things like fossil fuels. What do you think about nuclear energy and if people are concerned about the carbon footprint or fossil fuels and global warming, is nuclear energy a way to turn the tide in that respect, Bob?
Okay. It certainly is, and it's really not new. Our Navy has been running ships, and they're a lot more than 2,000 pounds. They push aircraft carriers at over 40 knots. They provide electricity for over 5,000 crew. They provide steam to heat the carriers, and they provide steam to launch aircraft and the catapults. So it's there. It is greenhouse gas free. The best part about nuclear power is as we're trying to phase out of coal, which, by the way, we're phasing out of, but the rest of the world is growing in it, especially Southeast Asia. Australia and New Zealand are making a ton of money on both natural gas and on coal sales into the region. But when you look at nuclear power, it's replacing the baseload capacity that we're losing by taking coal out of the equation. People just don't want to understand that there are different components of the energy dispatch curve. There's baseload capacity, which historically has been nuclear, coal, hydropower. Unfortunately, in the developed world, hydropower has been fully developed. You can tweak the turbines a little, and you can get a little bit more out of it. We've got Native Americans and First Nations in Canada that want all the dams and the turbines removed from the rivers because it's interfering with their fishing. If you really want a history with wind and solar, and it has a role to play, but not a big role, you need natural gas. The environmentalists first wanted to kill coal, and now they're saying when we finish killing coal, we're going to kill natural gas. You physically cannot have wind and solar without natural gas. So people need, and I've made this pitch because I've advised the Senate Energy Committee and the House Energy Committee periodically. And I said, before Congress votes on anything in the energy space, they need to bring somebody in and educate the Congress
on what energy really is about because they don't understand it. Nuclear is the way to go. So we talked about the nuclear navy. There was a big rush in the United States to build nuclear power plants, but the emphasis was always to build 1,000 megawatt reactors, 1,500 megawatt reactors. The problem there is they're usually building for a future, maybe 5, 10, or 15 years out. And if that load never materialized, or while you were trying to grow to that level, you had dead electrons mm-hmm. that you couldn't do anything with. And I think the small modular reactors are going to change that curve.
Okay, so this is what's exciting, and this is why this is news. And people may have seen the headline in the New York Post or in Fox Business. And if time permits, by the way, we'll try and take a few calls, 800-848-9222, that there's going to be a rollout of small nuclear reactors, which, while nuclear technology may not be new, this type of nuclear technology is new, at least for a consumer basis. I've never gone into a car dealership and had been offered a nuclear-powered car. Let me ask you, fellas.
Well, it's not really a nuclear-powered car. This is okay. These are the same nuclear reactors that power our submarines. So you know our submarines, how wide are they? They're not that big. So these are small nuclear reactors that will power a city of 250,000 people, a city of 500,000 people, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So it powers a city. It powers data centers. It powers anything that needs and the lifespan of some of these reactors are, I don't know, Bob would know better than me, anywhere from 40 to 67 years, I've heard.
So, Bob and John, you both have made the comparison to our nuclear-powered naval vessels. What are there any specific advancements or innovations that differentiate these small modular reactors from traditional nuclear reactors?
Size and cost.
Size and cost.
Those are the two big factors. If I need 40,000 megawatts, I take a 40,000 megawatt module, I put it in place. If my load grows and I need another 20,000 megawatts, I bring a 20,000 megawatt unit in. So you're building for current demand, not expected future demand. And then as that demand grows, you're playing catch up, and it's a factory built unit. You're not subject to the vagaries of on-site construction. Weather delays, they're made inside a factory, brought on a plant, connected to the grid, and you're up and running.
Nelson, let me ask you a question as the lawyer here, and maybe this should be the most obvious, because a lot of times the efforts to build a nuclear power plant are totally stymied. It's one of the reasons we haven't seen a new nuclear power plant built in the United States in some time. The efforts to shut down a nuclear power plant are often become a regulatory morass, as we're seeing now with Indian Point in New York. Given the complexity and the regulatory hurdles associated with nuclear energy products, and nuclear energy projects, what strategies does Red Apple have in place to navigate those sort of challenges?
Well, that's really a great question, because the regulatory environment is a tough one. The NRC is responsible for regulating the small modular reactors, just like it is big power plants. So we have to overcome a problem in the environmental community. Just as the environmental community is opposed to gas-powered plants or coal-powered plants, they're also opposed to nuclear-powered plants because of the accidents that happened at Three Mile Island and Chernobyl a long time ago. So we face a regulatory environment that's basically hostile to nuclear plants. President Biden has recently suggested that there should be more liberalization of licensing of nuclear power plants, because I think even the Biden administration recognizes the need for this form of nuclear energy. But as John pointed out, the history of this type of energy it does relate to the nuclear submarine. And in the former Soviet Union, the country took the old nuclear reactors that were inside their submarines, parked submarines in inlets all over the Soviet Union, and are using them even today to power cities there. So they've proven to be completely safe, but the old submarines are starting to rust. So the risk is not with the power plant. The problem is just how to keep these submarines afloat. In the United States, with small modular reactors, we need an environment that will give permission to build these plants. They're actually built in factories instead of stick-built like houses are. And right now, one company has achieved approval by the NRC to build these plants. And even though that company doesn't appear to be viable financially right now, the fact that they have gotten permission is an indication that this form of nuclear reactor will, in fact, be approved. But we have to live down the environment that was created from a public relations standpoint by right. the Three Mile Island accident, which was, it's hard to believe, but that was 45 years ago.
So,
and no one ever got sick or was hurt by, I guess, the worst nuclear reactor it's ever been in the United States accident. So it didn't turn out to be anything.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. I'm also glad you mentioned President Biden, because one of the things that I wanted to emphasize is this is a totally nonpartisan issue, right? Right. In an era where it seems like certain technologies are pushed by left-wing entities and certain technologies are pushed by right-wing entities, this is not a Democrat or Republican thing. This is for anybody that wants efficient, clean, and reliable energy, right?
No, that's absolutely true. And yet, I was just channel surfing and Netflix and noticed a Three Mile Island special, which I thought, this is interesting. This must be an historic event. But I found out it's a brand new anti-nuclear show on television that's being produced today, which suggests to me that there is an anti-nuclear group that is quite strong and using fear tactics in order to diminish or make more difficult advancing our energy future with nuclear energy. So it'd be interesting to know who has a financial stake in stopping nuclear.
All right, Nelson, Bob, and John, I'm not sure which of the three of you is the best person to answer this question, but obviously, even if it was 45 years ago, people remember Three Mile Island. They remember Chernobyl. They remember Fukushima in Japan. How does United Nuclear Group plan to address public concerns about nuclear safety and waste management with this SMR initiative?
I think the biggest thing that we can do is use the nuclear Navy and its safety record, which is over 60 years old, and it's exemplary. What happened in Three Mile Island, there was a human error. The automated system shut Three Mile Island down, and as Nelson said, there was no radioactive release that was damaging to anybody. If you look at Chernobyl was Soviet technology. What they did is they didn't believe in containment. If you've ever been in a nuclear plant, or if you've ever looked at plans for a nuclear plant, the rebar and cement is built to withstand a jetliner fully fueled crashing into it. Russians didn't do that. When Chernobyl blew, there was nothing to contain the radioactivity, and it caused the disaster. Fukushima was another. The Japanese built the containment pools at 3 meters above sea level in an active tsunami and seismic area. When the earthquake happened, the tsunami that was generated was 9 meters. The reason for the spent fuel pools being at a low level, it made it real easy to offload the spent fuels, send them to France, have them reprocessed, bring them back, and load them back into the plant. when Fukushima blew, the Japanese government was blaming the utility was blaming the government. Nobody brought in, well, once the power lines went down, it went to the first level of backup, which was diesel. They brought no diesel engines in, incremental diesel engines in, brought no incremental fuel in. That kicked them over to the next backup, which was battery backup. They never brought new batteries in to continue to keep the spent fuels pools cool. So, you know, you had three different instances, one which was benign, and that was Three Mile Island. You had one that was a technology issue and just building methodology for Chernobyl. And then you had Japanese hubris, which created a major problem in Fukushima. I was involved primarily in Fukushima. When Fukushima blew, we had 25,000 people in Japan when I was at AIG. And I was tasked with running the crisis management group to figure out how to protect our people. So, yeah, if you look at what, you know, you raised the issue, Frank, that it really isn't a partisan issue. Let me explain. The first issue that really created a problem, and if you talk to anybody in the nuclear industry, any of the nuclear utilities, they'll tell you the biggest single thing that hurt nuclear power was the China syndrome with Jane Fonda. That scared the pants off of virtually everybody. When you move beyond things like that, you look at what happened when Obama was running for president. Harry Reid said, I will support you, but what you need to do is you have to guarantee me you will kill Yucca Mountain. And Yucca Mountain was designed to be the repository for spent fuels. And I was at the DOE with the group that was seconded by IBM, from IBM to the DOE, and they were told by the White House, kill Yucca Mountain. We need you to write a study that says that the containment capacity of Yucca Mountain can't handle current fuel, spent fuel rods, let alone future fuel rods. That was flat out wrong. If anytime you look at anything that talks about spent fuels or nuclear fuels in general, they always talk about weight. They don't talk about volume. If you took all the spent fuel, and this is a statistic from Entergy, from the CEO of Entergy, if you took all the spent fuel rods, and we don't reprocess, how do we reprocess? Well, if you take the spent fuel rods, the containment would be one football field, one U.S. football field, 16 feet deep. If you reprocess, like many countries do, the U.K., France, and Japan, and if you reprocess those fuels, it would be one end zone, 9 feet deep. Yucca Mountain was a huge cavernous space. But the deal was, I'll support your bid for president, you kill Yucca Mountain. And that's exactly what happened. Now the utilities collected $34 billion from ratepayers to pay for Yucca Mountain. The utilities that contributed into that sued the federal government and won, but they didn't get any restitution. Government said that money's already been spent. It was not spent on Yucca Mountain.
I feel like I've gotten in the last 20 minutes an education that should entitle me to an honorary nuclear degree. Well, last question on this for any of the three of you that are best equipped to answer it. And then, John, if you're willing to stick around, I have a few other questions on issues not related to energy, but of issues of common interest to both of us. We're in this era now where cyber attacks have become commonplace. We're seeing government entities subject to ransomware attacks. Are there any measures that you guys are taking that can ensure that the cybersecurity and the resilience of this SMR nuclear infrastructure can withstand potential cyber threats? Anybody?
I think we're at the very early stage of this.
Okay, so then maybe that's premature.
The first nuclear plant, the first SMR, might be installed in 2031.
Ah, okay. So we got a ways to go.
Yeah, we got a ways to go. I mean, this is a project over the next, let's say if the first project is 2031, 7 years from now, it's over the next 7 to 50 years. So it's the, like I said at the beginning, it's the future of America. These are the same reactors that have been in nuclear submarines, let me tell you, 60 years. And they have been safe for 60 years, and they've been operating safely for that period of time. And as one of my friends said, is there any fallout or is there any radiation? Well, we're doing a study to make sure that none of the submariners that worked in nuclear submarines for 60 years ever got any got sick or ever got any radiation.
Wow. All right. Happy and Bob, I appreciate the time. I would love to stay in touch with you on this. And I think what you're doing is really interesting and potentially nuclear technology that could make a lot of these different entities that don't seem to agree on anything, make them all happy. Thank you both for coming on.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.
Anytime.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.